Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. First of all, good evening, John.
Thought you'd forgotten. Yeah, good evening, Ben. Hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone, indeed. As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number this evening is the usual, which is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. We're also live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie and as a podcast. We did get an email in. Well, we'll bring that to you later. Mm-hmm. Thanks to Connor for that. We'll get to that in a moment about an upcoming event, which it's a Space Apps Challenge organized by NASA and ESA. And we'll give you a bit more details of that later, but we'll start, as usual, with what to see in the night sky.
Okay, we have the International Space Station in our skies. Strangely enough, Ben, it's almost to the minute to the same time last week, 11:49. I think it was 11:48. Mm-hmm. And strangely enough, I went to put something in the bin because I forgot all about it when I went home. And went out to put something in the bin, not realizing what time it was, turned around, and lo and behold, the space station came into sight again. And that's because we always look up. We're doing things as well. So we have 11:49 p.m. again, a second pass at 11:50 p.m. And a little bit different this time. Its altitude is only 10 degrees. And it's max mag is -1.2, which is quite bright. Which is good as well. So,
not brighter, so it is. It's quite low in the sky and there are much brighter passes. But I think tonight, maybe tomorrow, is probably our last chance to see it in the evening skies for
it
a few weeks yet.
Until the 28th, which is Friday-ish. Yep, that's it. And then we have to wait another month until September the 14th, until October the 3rd. So you can put those in your diary if you're a fan of the space station. Now, Delta Aquarids peaking this 28th, which is Friday again. And it's an average shower this time. It can produce up to 20 meters an hour at its peak. And something it's produced by debris left behind comets Marsden and Kracht. And the show annually runs from July the 12th until August the 23rd. So before and after, you will get a chance to see a few peaking on the evening of July the 28th. It's sort of around midnighty time is the best time to see that, till about 3 in the morning. So, and the gibbous moon will set around 1:11 a.m. So you'll get a good chance to view these in a good dark sky later on, up to dawn, just before 3 a.m. And it's not particularly a high,
events.
You'll still be able to catch a few good ones. And best viewing, again, will be from a dark location after midnight. And the meteors will radiate from the constellation Aquarius, so you're going to have to Google that as well, just to make sure you're looking in the right direction. So they can appear anywhere in the sky, but Saturn is in the area, so many meteors pointed back to Saturn are Delta Aquarids. So that's if you can find Saturn as well.
What you might call slow-burning meteor showers. Mm-hmm. It goes on over a number of weeks and mm-hmm. slowly creeps up. It's not a great count, not the best meteor shower of the year, but at least you have a greater chance of seeing meteors over the next couple of days than normal. In fact, on Sunday the 30th, the Alpha Capricornids peak, and they're coming from, they appear to emanate from the constellation of Capricorn. So over the weekend, all going well, clear skies. And when the moon is out of the way, there's a greater chance than normal of seeing some meteors. Of course, you have a chance any time. There's always the random one. They don't always or only appear during when the regular predictable meteor showers.
Right. Now, I've been watching Mercury because I have this little app on my phone that shows me exactly where all the planets are. And just at the moment, Mercury is about 7 p.m. on the sun scale. So if you look directly at the sun and look over towards 7 o'clock, that's where Mercury is. So it's whizzing around. So it's going to get brighter. Sorry. It's going to get dimmer as it comes towards the sun before it disappears again, from minus 0.3 to 0.0. And on July the 28th, Mercury is passing very close to Regulus, magnitude plus 1.4. And if you know where all these stars are, you'll see it watching or brazing past them as well. Venus, a magnitude of minus 4.5, which is really bright. The only thing is it's getting very low in the bright twilight at the moment. And more so every day by the end of the month, it's just going to disappear and appear back in our morning skies again. So to look for it, use binoculars, and it's due west starting 15 to 20 minutes after sunset. So watch out for that one. Mars, it's quite dim now. This, it glows weakly to the upper left of Venus. And Regulus, as twilight deepens again, it's going to disappear by the end of the month. So good luck if you can find that particular one. Jupiter, minus 2.4, it's still quite bright. It rises around 1 a.m. in the morning in the east and northeast. And by the beginning of dawn, it shines very high towards the southeast. Saturn, plus 0.7, quite dim in Aquarius, rises in the late twilight. It's highest in the south and the sharpest and steadiest in a telescope. So it's a good one to watch if you can spot it. I don't know what angle the rings are to us at the moment. They never get really fantastically...
I think they're quite closed from our perspective at the moment.
Not, so we're sort of looking end on a bit. Yeah, so
almost, yeah.
Which is a shame because they're only up to 10 metres deep. You know, it's really only 33 feet or thereabouts. So it's a remarkable piece of engineering.
Thousands of
whoever engineered that particular one. So yeah. It's just lots of ice clusters and things bashing off each other and reflecting back here to Earth.
Bits of dust and rocks,
yep,
and pebbles.
That's it. Yeah, loads of moons around it as well. And good fun to watch as well through a telescope. Uranus and Neptune, dim. And Uranus, in fact, is only 10% lower to the left of Jupiter at the moment. So it's a good chance to see Uranus if you want to spot where it might be in the sky. Neptune, it's in the Aquarius-Pisces border, rising after dark. And it's very high in the south-southeast before dawn begins. And it's about 2 degrees east of Saturn. So they're all pretty close to each other. Very difficult to see. I have seen Uranus. I haven't seen Neptune, I don't think, through a telescope. But one of these fine days. And Mercury I haven't looked for either, because it's too close to the sun.
Okay. Thank you, John. Speaking of nice things to see in the sky.
Yeah.
Do you know, I was reading you today that comets,
yeah,
Hale-Bopp, is,
yeah,
quite actually visible at the moment. Remember Hale-Bopp?
Yeah,
that's,
I do.
Right,
yeah.
You couldn't miss it back in 1997.
It was straight through our old front door. You could look up and see it. It was great. It was a naked eye.
Oh,
yeah.
The best comet for hundreds of years, I'd say. Anyway, the bad news is, of course, it's so far away. It's very dim. It's actually magnitude plus 20. So you have to know exactly where it is and what you're looking for, and you need a reasonably good telescope to catch it. But that's just by the by. Speaking of the moon, we have a 49% waxing crescent moon above our horizon. It was due south just about an hour ago when it was about 48%, and we'll set, actually we're coming up to, as you may guess from being a 49% waxing crescent, we're almost at first quarter, and first quarter is actually this evening at 6 minutes past 11 to be precise, and it will set just after midnight, 2 minutes after midnight. These are Dublin times, but it's not too much different around the country. It'll vary by about 20 minutes or so at the most. At that stage, of course, we'll be in an hour past the first quarter, and we'll be able to see 51% of the face of the moon, in which case, of course, technically speaking, then it's a waxing gibbous moon. And it'll rise again tomorrow in the afternoon, about 3:15 or so. At that stage, it'll be 57%, and again, juice out again tomorrow at just before 8 o'clock when it'll be up to 59%. So as I mentioned, the first quarter moon will be later this evening, and the new moon, or Sturgeon moon, which is the first moon in August, will be on August the 1st at 7:30 to be precise. So being on August the 1st, as you can imagine, there'll be a second full moon in August. I think it's on the 31st, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So, sunrise tomorrow in Dublin will be at 5:31 a.m., which is 11 minutes later than a week ago, and the sun will cross the meridian or be due south at 1:31 p.m., same time as a week ago, and the sun sets at 9:30 p.m., a whole 10 minutes earlier than a week ago, and then we'll have civil twilight until 10:15, and then from then we'll have nautical twilight until 11:20, and from 11:20 until about 4:15 the next morning we'll have astronomical twilight. No astronomical night until the 30th, coming up very shortly.
Shortly is right, and indeed. There's a what's the word that you use? A great de-stretch in the evening.
Contraction.
Whatever it is. Yeah, the grand, coming up to it is the grand stretch in the evening. And then
the grand contraction.
Yeah,
in the
evening. It is noticeable, definitely. You know,
it's, yeah, but still not so bad. It's still, when the skies are clear, which hasn't been too often lately,
yeah.
9:45, I looked out last night, 9:45, so still fairly bright, so happy enough.
Yeah, there we go. Anyway, good evening, Alan. Emails or texts coming in. Elon Musk punched a hole in the ionosphere, and that'll teach you to ruin the signal this time of evening, making your show fuzzy in County Kildare. Sorry about that. You're just probably a little bit far away, so you're going to have to move, I think, a little bit closer to us.
Move back into Dublin. Back into,
that's where it is. He's not that far away, so most of the time he can get us quite well, which is great. Anyway, good evening to you. Now, let's talk a little bit about the space apps. Now, Connor McGorry sent an email into astronomy.ie, and we're delighted to have an odd email or two every now and again.
We do. Astronomy at DublinCityFM.ie is our email address if you'd like to get in touch.
Yeah. And he is from, he's the account executive, Clear Story International. And just before we go into it, I think we'll just explain what it is exactly. First launched in 2012, NASA's Space Apps event was created to foster a global community based on core principles of science, the innovation and collaboration as well. So it's its first year receiving participants from 17 different countries. So this is getting rather large now at this stage. I'm not sure how many is around doing this thing at the moment. And it's now the largest international hackathon. It's a brilliant in the world. It ensures that all participants can engage in a wide range of workshops, projects and teams, and ensures all participants can engage with a wide range of workshops as well. So that's what it is. So Ireland is asked, I think, to participate greatly with everybody else in this largest global annual hackathon. That's a really good word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Dublin event is on October 7th and 8th. And it's a hackathon for coders, scientists, designers, storytellers, makers, builders, technologists, and innovators around the world to come together and use open data. This is, you see, they're going to be presented with certain challenges, and they're going to be encouraged to get into teams, and they're going to get data from NASA and other space agency partners. And get the data, and with their knowledge and the data, the whole idea is to create solutions to challenges we face on Earth and in space. And it can be anything. It's not just necessarily technological or space related, or how to build a moon lander or anything like that. We won't know the challenges until later in the month, or August or September, I think. And the exact location in Dublin hasn't been decided yet. You will get more information on spacechallenge.org, and the problems could relate to anything, not just the climate, say, but food production or the challenge can really be anything, and you will be, as I say, you can build, meet, go in with other people and put your heads together and try and solve problems.
Lots
using
problems.
Using open source data from NASA and its part and its partners. So when we get a bit more information on that,
last year, 2022, more than 31,500 participants took part in this space challenge, with the competition encouraging innovation and collaboration from across the globe. So this will be an interesting topic for us to keep an eye on. And so we may at some stage get a chance to talk to Conor McGorry at some stage. So
maybe so. Yeah. Hopefully, yes. So just in the past, some of the issues or the challenges have related to space exploration, astrophysics, software development, but it can also be things like storytelling.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting, is how you develop an app using data from space agencies to solve a problem related to storytelling. I don't know. When we get more information, yeah, we'll bring it to you. But in the meantime, you can, if you're interested in it and want to register for this event, and if you do very well, then you could be invited over to NASA's headquarters in the U.S., to participate in further events. You get more information on spaceappschallenge.org.
Did you know that Peggy Whitson applied 4 times? She sent in the application to NASA.
To be an astronaut?
Yeah, before she went on to set many records in space. And it was actually Apollo 11 that inspired her to create the record-breaking NASA thing with Peggy Whitson. And it didn't deter her at all. She just kept applying, because there was a going back into the years of the Apollo 11 time, there were not many ladies involved in the space industry, and she thought, cool job, but I never really told anybody about it because it seemed so unreal. So brilliant to see her at that. So she had 4 attempts, and she has set many records at this stage, so that's great to hear from Peggy Whitson as well. SpaceX launched 22 Starlink satellites and then lands its rocket back at sea. Funny enough, I watched a program on Elon Musk the other day about the whole SpaceX thing as well. It's quite an interesting watch if you're... I taped it, actually. Or should I say I didn't tape it, because we don't have a tape recorder. It's all recordings now. And it was quite an interesting program to watch. So, and the adulations and joy and all that sort of stuff as they... the first rocket boosters landed back on the little launch pads, whether it be out in the sea or on land. And it's certainly saves a huge, huge amount of money by doing that type of thing. So it's another 22 Starlings. Where are they all going to fit?
Plenty of space out there. Well, although it is getting very crowded up there. Thank you, John. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and Ben Emmett. And our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. Now, a new study reveals that there could be a lot of rogue planets out there. Now, we normally think of planets as orbiting stars, different size planets made of different types of materials, orbiting different types of stars, different sizes, and whatnot, but now there's a new study which seems to imply that there are rogue planets with no home suns. They did evolve or form like most solar systems out of clouds of dust and gas and such like, but depending on how they formed or where they formed, they might have been kicked out due to gravitational forces. And there could be, actually, trillions of rogue planets just wandering, flying through space in random directions. Hopefully there's none coming this way anywhere soon. But they think now there could be 20 times more rogue planets than stars.
Wouldn't be great to think.
No, yeah. Me too. No, I like them safely in orbits around other stars where there's no chance of them coming in this direction.
But imagine if there's something on these planets.
Well, there could be, but anyway, it took them, these findings came from a 9-year study. And looking at, I think they use gravitational lensing and such like, but they come up with this figure now that there are 20 times more rogue planets than there are stars in the galaxy.
Oops.
That's trillions of planets heading hither, thither, and yon.
They're quite large too, Earth-sized ones, which may make you sit up and take notice, I think, as well. So it's the Roman telescope that's doing this. So the Nancy Grace Roman telescope joins the rogue hunt to find these rogue planets, and they will do as time goes on. Your buddy, Brian May, the fellow you met on that Sir Patrick Moore's birthday party, his 80th.
It was the Skyhead Knights 50th anniversary. Mm-hmm. Got an invite to go over and rub shoulders. Yeah, I did, strangely enough.
So you rub shoulders with Sir Patrick Moore and Brian May, because he's a physicist as well, if you didn't know that.
I did, and one or two others who'd be well known, but anyway. He's the Queen. Won't do any more name dropping.
The Queen guitarist, but he seemingly is to release a book of 3D images of asteroid Bennu, so we'll keep an eye out for that. And it's going to be out shortly. I'm not sure exactly. He's 76 now. Would you believe that? Yeah.
And looking well on it last time I saw him.
Yes. We're not naming, dropping any names or anything like that. So, so there we go. The James Webb telescope has seemingly spied water near the center of a planet-forming disk in cosmic first. So the astronomers have found for the first time that a rocky alien world could possibly have water at the center. It's a center. So life is found virtually wherever there is water on Earth. So that'd be a good sign if we found something like that as well.
Thank you, John. And we were talking earlier about Trojan asteroids and Trojan planets. Now, the big telescopes down there in Chile, the astronomers down there, they found the possible sibling of a planet orbiting a distant star. Now, we're used to Trojan asteroid. There are the Trojan asteroids that follow and lead Jupiter in the Lagrangian points. The Lagrangian point being a place in space where the gravity of one object can be neutralized by another. In the case of Jupiter, where the gravitational pull of Jupiter and the Sun are equal. So you have these asteroids, what we call Trojan asteroids. And actually, we do have some in Earth as well. I think 30 degrees in front of us, 30 degrees behind us in our orbit. But for the first time now, they think they've discovered two planets that sharing the same orbit. So it's not unusual to have smaller bodies in the same orbit as a planet. But in this case, they think there are two planets sharing the same orbit. So, of course, a year on one would be a year on the other. And this brought us up the subject of a film that we both were thinking of simultaneously, strangely enough. This clicked with me, and you saw this film recently. It's a 1969 film called Journey to the Far Side of the Sun. And it's about a guy on planet Earth, and they send him off. They believe there's a planet on the exact opposite side of the sun to us on Earth. They sent him off, but he appears to come back and not go there after 6 months or whatever, and say, well, why did you come back? What are you talking about?
Everything is exactly the same.
But apparently there was a planet, in this story anyway, on the far side, and he did go there, and everything was the same except opposite. And his doppelganger, at the same time as he left Earth, left the other planet and came here. So it was his doppelganger, I suppose, who was saying, why'd you come back? And he said, I didn't go. But the guy went to the other side, and everything was writing backwards, and switches that were left were up and down, that were down were up and up were down. And everything was back to front and right to left. And
It's really strange, because this came out in 1969. I'm not sure when I saw it first. It was in around there, or just into the 70s. And it came into my mind the other day, and I said, it took me ages to find out the name of it, because I thought it was The Other Side of the Moon, or something like that. I just couldn't figure it out. So after a large amount of Googleizing, I found it.
It's a new word, new verb, so, Googleizing.
So I have to see now if it's available anywhere to see again on the internet or any of the YouTubes or something like that. So it would be interesting to see if our Encyclopedia Elanica could help us on that.
Yes. Journey and you won't be surprised to see here that, of course, some of the writers are there, Gerry Anderson and Sylvia Anderson, amongst, and David James as well. Weren't they the people who wrote the things like Thunderbirds, if I'm not mistaken, and UFO? You remember that series on TV?
Yeah.
Where they were on the moon base. Yeah, and anyway, that's another sort of thing. We've run out of time and we've slightly off topic, but not really. It's all space related. And I say that's all the time we have this evening. Thank you, John, for your news items and for driving the sound desk. And our email address for any comments, questions or queries you may have is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And thanks to James Sweeney and to Colonel Lennon for making the show available as a podcast and for putting it up on astronomy.ie. And the people here who put it up on SoundCloud, I believe, amongst other places where you can catch this podcast. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, for this edition of the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Hello China. 9 o'clock, it's Brian Lynham with Threads. And 11 p.m, Ear to the Globe with Nigel Wood's World Music Mix. And then from midnight till 2 a.m, we have After Hours, which is Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues and soul. But please join myself and John at the same time next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening and say goodnight, John.
Good night, John.
Good night, John.
See you now. Bye-bye.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.